Brainstorm Brewery is sponsored by mtgprice.com. Track your whole collection and its value for free at mtgprice.com. Welcome, everyone, to another special episode of Brainstorm Brewery. Here we are yet again, going to continue to fail at this podcast that we've done for so long. Yes, last week we were off our rockers, or we were just definitely not in sync. I don't know what it is. It's something like it's kryptonite. During the day, we've done it one time or other before, and the cast had the same eerie, empty feeling of no soul.
I know, the whole time we were recording, we're like, I'm so glad we're recording during the day. This gives us so much time for activities at night. Then we're just like, magic cards with art on them.
Yeah, what you don't understand is I did a lot of the editing. I cut out a lot of gaps. And there was, Jason commented on it, and everyone else didn't get to hear it, but there was many of those. And it was just, I don't know how to explain it. It's a weird phenomenon. So we're going to try it again in the future and see if we could iron this out, or maybe rule it that we can't do it during the day. So we'll get
to the bottom of this. I sounded drunk. I was not. I was totally stone sober. I was listening to that. I'm like, why do I sound like I was drunk? I think I probably just didn't get enough sleep. I sound like an... Like, if I were... You guys heard me drunk. The whole Chromanticore episode. Like,
no, if you want to hear you drunk, what was that Money Draft episode where you were
black? 10?
Oh, man.
Money Draft. No, it wasn't 10. It was like 15 or something like that. That was a good time.
You should write that down on like your ID and just have that for people so they can recognize who the real Jason Eyalt is. But we got other people on this podcast, namely Corbin. Corbin, say hi.
Hey, what's up? I'm on the no sleep plan this
week. And then we're done with Corbin. We don't worry about him. He's irrelevant. But then we got another guy right here. Ryan Bushard. Come out of, you're gonna
still,
come out of the bush.
Still going strong at that Bushard thing, Marcel, after what, 3.5 years now. I really appreciate it.
It's Jason who makes fun of you. It's Marcel who thinks it's pronounced Bush.
I know it's Bushard, but I would not.
Holy goodness. Wait, what was it again?
Holy goodness.
Bushard.
I'm the one who started Bushard. I don't know why you're mad at Marcel.
It's like a Bushard.
Because he does it every time.
Because it's funny.
And I was probably old at this point. It's like the same joke that you got at the end of the cast where you're saying, oh, thank you. Is this going to be the last and final episode ever of Brainstorm Brewery?
Oh, I'm sorry that we have running gags that delight our listeners and make them feel like they're a part of a family. They're related to this podcast because they're having the shared experience of a running gag.
Delight.
Delight's a pretty strong word for anything on this podcast.
Yep, I would say that as well. Very strong. That's an aggressive positioning there. Your
posture. Hey, man, our rhetoric is strong, and so is our game. I don't agree with the whole premise of apologizing for the last episode at the beginning of this podcast.
Oh, we know how you feel about apologizing.
That wasn't apologizing. That was merely stating the facts. And, you know, it was very apparent. It was like, you know, the handwriting was on the wall.
Handwriting was on the wall. Here's another Marcellism.
Handwrite on the wall.
Nobody. It's just the writing is on the wall, Marcel.
Handwritten. It's handwritten. You don't understand. It was crafted and given the dedication of someone that doesn't use a machine to do the job.
I wanted to say something, but I didn't think it would be my position as a guest.
Oh, who's this?
Like
who's this guy?
A
Wait a minute. Oh, no. We got a guest here. Who we know him as Travis Allen. And I forgot your Twitter handle. How would you say it?
It's Wizard Bumpin.
Wizard Bumpin. You can find him. He's a writer for MTG Price. I'm sorry. I'm not too familiar with your credentials.
Zero research.
It's okay. Me too. How you doing? I've been writing for MTG Price for close to 2 years now, and was one of the initial writers on the site, and am now one of the pro trader writers with Corbin and Jason here, and one of the editors.
Travis is like the original MTG Price writer, right?
There were a few people on ahead of me, but what was his name? There was one or two people who were there before me, but they were intermittent and short-lived and have long since left.
You started before I did, right?
Me?
Yeah.
It means the first time around.
The first time I started writing.
Yes, yeah.
Yeah, dude's been there forever anyways. If you get the opportunity to read his stuff, you certainly should do so. It's always worth reading.
So how's being an editor? What's that whole process? I know I could never do it myself. I would want to shoot myself at the end of the day, but how do you deal with it?
Well, you know, Corbin gets a chance to do some of it as well. Perhaps his experiences are different than mine, but it's a lot of fun. You know, I enjoy getting to read all the other ideas and see the work that's crafted, and you have to have a personality for it, though. Someone who's willing to catch all of their and theirs and yours and that type of thing.
Or you could hire writers that know the difference.
This is Magic Finance, so the pool's a little shallow, right?
Oh, man. Shots fired.
So it's going to be in Dugout over here.
So what's one of your pet peeves as an editor that you just want to...
Is this what we brought him on to talk about?
Well, I need to dive into this. Obviously not as a finance podcast.
That would be the best fucking troll ever. Like, hey, how'd you like to come on MTG Price? You're on a... Oh, man, I see you come on MTG Price. Time to go suicide myself. All right. I'm done. I'm done making fun of you. I'm clearly dumber.
You know, I don't know how much I really should divulge here. I'm afraid I'm going to upset the people that I edit if I talk about the things they did that annoy me.
Oh, they don't listen to this podcast. Don't worry about it.
You know, one of the trends that I've noticed is very common, not just in the people that I have to cover, but in all Magic writers, because we're all putting out content so frequently, is a lack of research. I see card names spelled incorrectly all the time. People miss cards that are legality of cards, all that sort of thing. That's very easy to check with a quick magiccards.info search. That always bugs me.
I mean, now editing is what it is. If you enjoy doing it, it's great. But yeah, anyways, that is what it is. I think we have a pretty good core of writers at MTG Prize who don't take a ton of editing. So,
oh, sure. That is not to demean any of the people that we have on staff.
I would say that Travis's articles are more enjoyable to read than talking about his editing. But anyway, so I mean, we do have a lot to talk about this week, starting with the thing we touched on last week. Now, as we mentioned, we were casting in the middle of the day last week. The announcement about the Magic Online changes had just come out, and I think I did a pretty good job of at least breaking them down last week. But we had no time to really process it. You know, at this point, there's been a lot of literature written about it, a lot of numbers crunched, and you know, we have had some time to process it. So coming in, you know, to this week now with a little more, what are your guys' impressions a week in of the Magic Online changes?
I think this is a good thing for Magic. It's a better thing because now you don't have a deflating currency, which would be the old currency would be packs that are going to constantly deflate as you get more of these. So you got at least a constant prize structure, and then it has people continuing to buy into the system, which you need to keep afloat. I still think the costs, I still haven't read any analysis exactly. I think I've seen a couple charts where the cost is, you know, the payouts are a little bit higher, but the daily events are double the input. So, I mean, there's downsides to it, but hopefully it fixes Magic. That's the best I can say about it.
Well, what do you think about the fact of the prices? You know, people are using the payouts, and a lot of the numbers they're using are putting the packs at the $4 MSRP price, because that's what Wizards values them at. So they're looking at the new changes saying, oh, this is so much worse, not taking into account that packs haven't been worth that MSRP in a very, very long time. I mean, so does that bother you when people are talking about the new payouts, or do you think it matters?
No, it matters a lot because, yeah, the packs, they're never MSRP, even when they were, you know, high-value packs. I mean, maybe Modern Masters or something. But
yeah, I mean, like, even Origins right now is down to $340 as of today.
Yeah.
And that just came out, so it doesn't take long.
Exactly. So, I mean, yes, yeah, non-deflating. So, like, the value of your EV is going to be higher, and there's not a variable, you know, and a variable, as you can say. Variable squared, right?
Sure.
Yeah, it's like an unknown.
I'm not an MTGO guy, so I can't speak to any specifics, but what struck me the most about the announcement was that this is clearly a very complex system, the MTGO market. And with any complex system, when you make changes at this scale, it takes time for those changes to perpetuate out across the system. So I think we're seeing a lot of initial reactions that to the surface level changes, but it'll be interesting to see how this plays out over the course of weeks and months and how it changes the economy, because it could be a net positive, but it's difficult to see that through the immediate fog of entry fees rising.
I've heard compelling arguments for both eventualities, really. So it's really hard to know. It's pure speculation at this point.
With any complex system like this, absolutely. You see this in real life complex systems as well, is it's very difficult to track these changes out through the entire system. And, you have a small team working on it for MTGO, so they can do their research, but they're not able to dedicate the resources that anyone can, for instance, on, the U.S. economy, which you see the same types of things. Small changes lead to this sort of butterfly effect across the system that nobody can predict.
Yeah, what I heard, or I can't confirm this, but I believe that they had not had an actual economist working with them to implement this new price structure, which I feel is like...
Neither does Hearthstone. What is that argument?
You're making a vast change to an economy that's obviously very fragile, and you're trying to get something to balance into equilibrium. If you're not going to hire a professional to do that job, you're not going to get a professional
just
job
done. Just because people disagree with what they're doing doesn't mean they don't, Hearthstone doesn't have an economist. Their price structure is worse than Magic's because there's no way to get money back out of it. Why
are you drawing a comparison to Hearthstone on this? I mean, you could talk about Magic Origins as a comparison to Hearthstone, and that's, it's still not really a good comparison. I'm saying you got an economy here that's in flux, that people make actual money on, that people make a living upon. So there's an actual economy right here that's very fragile. So
that's not their responsibility, though. The Magic Online was never designed to be somebody's job.
No, I'm not saying that, but the fact that it is, if you're going to make a disrupting type of play like this and not, pay a few dollars for an economic consultant, that seems a little bad practice in my own personal opinion. I just don't see where you wouldn't want to pay that kind of money to get something like that to balance it out better. If you're going to rely on the same people that are supposed to make Magic the Gathering the best program that it could possibly be, and you're relying on those same people to make the sound economic decisions, so it's supposed to be right. I just see a faulty logic in both of those.
Some people make a living by grinding League of Legends accounts of diamond and selling them. Some people make a living farming gold on World of Warcraft. Do Blizzard and Riot need to hire economists whenever they make a change to their currency?
When you got Magic the Gathering is based upon the secondary market, what do people do with their cards so they can continue to play after they open them? They sell them. They sell them to a bot. They got their packs. They buy their packs from bots so they can continue to play these things. The integration of the economy with what you consume in Magic is hand in hand. It's built in. As much as they don't want to talk about it, it's actually a major part of it.
That's a bug, not a feature, though. That was never within the scope of their original intention for offering Magic Online as a service. And saying they need to hire an economist so they make sure they, properly deal with the secondary market they can't even really acknowledge, I think that's a specious argument. I don't know.
It strikes me as very odd that team would choose not to have somebody on staff to oversee these decisions. I mean, PukaTrade, it keeps three economists on contract to deal with changes in the way their system is working. I mean, these are not systems that you can fly by the seat of your pants. And you can't talk about the secondary market on MTGO as sort of a consequence of what's going on. I mean, really, that drives the entire player base. You can talk about players grinding to diamond and selling the accounts on League of Legends, but people are going to play League regardless of whatever market exists for diamond level accounts. If the MTGO market is absolutely atrocious, you're just going to lose your entire customer base. So they can't ignore it entirely. I mean, that's their market.
Amen. Amen. Yes.
If somebody wants to quit, they can quit. That's their decision if they don't like the value. Hearthstone's terrible value, but people still play it. They're both card games on the internet.
Magic's not a terrible value. I don't know if we need to say that people aren't going to leave Magic Online in droves if they keep fucking up because it's slightly less shitty than Hearthstone. I don't know if that's a good argument either. I'm not going to always agree with you 100%, Corbin.
No, my argument is not that it's better than Hearthstone or whatever. My argument is, why are people going crazy on Wizards when they're behaving like every other game company?
Because this game is not just a game. This is a lifestyle.
Playing Magic online is not meant to be a lifestyle. That, like you said, that's a bug.
It is. It's part of Magic. Like, if Wizards hasn't realized by this point that that's what they're creating, then there's a major disconnect going on that has nothing to do with this. And they clearly know that's what's going on. So they have to realize there are people way more invested into this than there are into Hearthstone. If Hearthstone went away tomorrow, there would not be people losing their shit. I mean, there would be a lot of people who would be angry about it, but I don't feel like anybody's entire life would be crushed outside of maybe a couple of select.
I guess all the wonderful people of the internet and the Twitter sphere know exactly how much research was put into a decision made by Wizards of the Coast. They're in those meetings, after all.
I don't understand your positioning. Like, you just seem just to want to argue.
Like, no, it's just this particular argument. You yourself said you think these changes are good, and then you're going to bash them for not having an economist on staff.
No, I mean, you can make good decisions in spite of your, you know, poor planning. You know.
So is it? So you think
poor planning? If you don't have an, if you go, okay, let me go build a deck. You know, let me go build a deck. I'm going to read some magazines and figure it out and get it all together. And I bet you know, you might be able to construct a deck, and you know, it could even pass code. But I bet you it's going to be a lot more difficult than if you go out and get a professional to either aid you or just do the job.
That's not your argument. Your argument's like, oh, you built a deck and it turned out fine. Well, fuck you. You didn't go and get a guy who's an expert in chipmunks to see how disrupting the chipmunks' habitat by building a deck is going to work.
That's not what I'm saying.
That's your argument.
No, that is not my argument. That is
Marcel's.
It's a secondary argument.
Marcel's argument is, even if the process is flawed, you can occasionally end up with correct decisions, but you still want to make sure your processes are good.
A blind chipmunk finds a nut every once in a while, and if you'd hired a chipmunk behaviorist, you would know that.
We don't even know if it's a good decision. Like, it has not actually hit the market, and we haven't seen the effects of it.
They've never made a good decision. Why would they start now?
We're all in a theoretical space right here, and it's not...
Well, then why are you blaming them for their theoretical decision-making
process? Because if you're not doing what could be considered the best practice, you know... Then you could be like, okay, there's a flaw in this. And if you can see a gaping flaw in something, and you are obviously not someone that's qualified to make that decision well, and you can see a gaping flaw from outside in, then, you know, it's probably that bad.
But my problem is...
Oh, my God.
You're calling it a flaw while at the same time praising the decision they made. It's like... Yeah, you're terrible at this, but yeah, you made the right decision. So yeah,
you're going back in circles again, Larry. So let's move on past this subject, because Corbin Calvin, as he can. So I mean, we'll see how. Here we are. We're going to talk about Moda. We'll see how it happens. It's a big change to the economy. We don't know what's going to happen, and time will tell.
Can I toss in a last comment here?
Yes.
I think that anyone who claims to know where this is going to go is making it up entirely. Like, if they say, yeah, it's definitely going to do this because of X, Y, and Z, they have just ignore what they're telling you, because nobody can make that claim, not even the people at Wizards.
Right. So one of the other things, I mean, we should definitely move on from that particular argument, but one of the other things going on with this is the effect it has had on the market. We've seen prices on singles, if you look at Modern as an index or Legacy as an index, they've dropped since this announcement. So it has clearly led some number of people to, sell their collections or whatever. Prices have lowered. That's a thing that happened.
Yeah. MTGO traders Twitter account commented that they dropped their buy price for tickets and collections because they had so many come through.
To recognize is, the way that crafts can be, you know, horribly misused. So if you look at like a Modern index, yes, the prices are down some number of percentage points from where they were at a month ago, but they're up a large amount from where they were at 6 months ago. So, I mean, let's keep in mind here, the sky is not falling.
But it's PTQ season, so you got to take that into consideration also. So that's not going to give you like a straight.
Okay, Legacy is the same way.
So is, Legacy is up the same percentage?
No, not the same, obviously. But
how
like,
much?
Okay, I'll go pull up the graph.
Because I know Legacy and definitely Vintage, like Vintage has been on a decline, and some of the cards have been on a decline. I haven't seen the boost. I've been sitting on some Legacy staples, some dual lands actually for quite a while, and it's been about a year now, and they have done absolutely nothing. I think I lost value on those.
Yeah, just
Vintage Masters. Vintage Masters was the biggest sham that they gave us. Oh my God. Let's not get into this subject.
You're the one taking us there. All right, so legacy staples as an index today are down, looks like about 10% from where they were at a couple weeks ago. Compared to where they were at right before Modern Masters hit, they're up about 25%.
Nice.
So, I you know, it's really easy to say, oh, well, Wizards is obviously wrong because the you know, these numbers prove it. Look how far they've come down. While people cherry pick their graphs and don't look back far enough. Like, I just, but the point of that was, yes, I want to make that point, but there has been an effect. So at the very least, this decision has, you know, caused some people to, you know, make a decision to get rid of cards because of it. So I think that is worth noting. And we'll see really how things play out over the next couple months to see where we end up.
I think, yeah, did we see a bigger impact with this than we did when we saw the V4 changes? Because, I mean, that was like a short-lived drop. And it was like a heavy drop, and that lasted about like a week, I think. And all of a sudden, people started buying back in. I mean, you know, people learned that, you know, as much as they want to hate Wizards and they think by selling off their collection is going to get Wizards mad at them, all they're doing is really kind of screwing themselves. And they're selling their cards that they're going to buy back later for less than they're going to buy them back. And a lot of people, you know, they want to bitch and moan, but ultimately, where else are you going to play Magic? Cockatrice? Yeah, sure. You know, you're going to play on Moto.
People make lots of bold proclamations and then they come back.
Yeah, I mean, you got to be greedy when people are fearful, right? Like, I kind of like it when people panic and sell their collection as if Magic Online's going to go away because of one decision that seems like way less impactful than other decisions they've made in the past. Like, I absolutely would get greedy when they're fearful and not only buy collections, I lower my buy price like a lot of the bots are doing.
Yeah, exactly. So I think that's the point I wanted to get us to is that this may be an opportunity if you, you know, unless you're dead set that these changes are going to destroy Magic Online and it's never going to come back, fine, sell your stuff, whatever. But if you, you know, have more confidence in the long-term game than that, you know, you may be looking to pick up stuff right now, especially as we move near the end of Modern Season Online, you'll start to see those continue to tail off and, you know, lower out over the next couple months.
Because the proof is in the pudding. Regardless of how flawed Magic Online is of an experience for Magic, it's still going to flourish, you know. And even if they don't get their shit together till the next 2 years, and it's unlikely that's going to happen, it's still going to flourish and it's still going to be a thriving economy because it's the only place you can play Magic legally online. And that's a shame that, you know, there's no competition for them to try a lot better. And there's not that fire underneath their ass for them to really, you know, push leagues and make, you know, Magic more of a better video game experience.
We were just talking about Hearthstone. How can you say there's no competition?
Well, yeah.
Just in general, like, just as a game in general, like, you don't understand how difficult it is to try to get people that I can think about trying to get into Magic and having them try Magic online and that just not going anywhere in the positive direction.
Well, it sounds like they're improving Duels of the Planeswalkers and making that more of a DLC sort of a service type based thing. Yeah, but I mean, it's getting better.
Have you played it?
I'm not fucking new, but new people are.
But I mean,
new people
have you played it?
It's great for new people.
Honestly,
I played the M12 version for the PlayStation.
No, I'm talking about the Magic Origins, the newest one. I played the newest one. I went through the whole Gideon thing. I played a little bit. Yes, they have improved it, but the gap in between that and Hearthstone there's a definite gap. And the gap in between that and Magic Online is a definite gap. So is this...
Yeah, it's an entree to Magic. You're talking about how Magic Online is not a good tool to get people to enter the game. I literally told you what their best possible tool is.
Yeah, if you look at it compared to Hearthstone, there's no competition. Like, there's numerous reasons. Like, if you play the gameplay, if you ever had, like, molasses in winter... Like there's a definite parallel, and then there's a time when you have to be very reactive to hit this button so you can make, you know, attack, so you can play spells instantly during the attack phase between attackers and blockers. You got to be quick on the button to press it, but the rest of the time it just slogs around and gameplay is just slow and it just grinds through. Where Hearthstone, like, there's action going on. You're moving your cards. Even when you got to wait there and sit there until the, you know, the fucking bomb goes off, like, once you get to your turn, there's, like, you know, it feels like there's more going on. And yes, because, yes, Hearthstone is a digital game created for that digital environment. And trying to get Magic, which is, you know, this archaic, you know, game to work in a digital realm, is going to have its difficulties. But, I mean, it's just disappointing. I hate to say it. It really is just disappointing.
Well, you're also coming from the perspective of somebody who's played, you know, for lack of a better term, real Magic. Right, so, you know, I tried Duels a couple years ago. Obviously, it's going to be disappointing when you're used to the full thing. You know, when you get the appetizer and you're used to the entree.
No, it's not. It has nothing to do with it. It has to do with the experience, the UI, the actual user experience when you get in there. I look at it like I'm not looking at it like this is something that I want to consume. I'm looking at it as something that I want to expose somebody to Magic to, a new person, and like it's very jittering. It's a jarring experience when you go through the tutorial. If you go through, play the actual Magic Origins. Like, right. they constantly pull you out of battle to do these little sub quests so you can learn how to use these mechanics. And the way that they layer out the mechanics is a little weird. Like, they introduce you to the first strike, and then after they introduce you to the first strike, they give you a double strike creature. And it's kind of like, you know, like, it's like the progression is a little weird. For me, it's a little jarring. They did well. It's one of the better, you know, Duels of the Planeswalkers, but some of the things that I would think would be this, like, common knowledge in a user experience is just not there. It's like, you could tell there's an obvious, you could tell when something is ghetto, or, you know, when something is just like, you know, people are being chintzy on the production quality. It's not quite there.
Because that's not typically been something that, an accusation that's been levied against Duels, because Duels was, you know, developed by an outside entity, not within WotC. So, it, you know, in the past, at least, had been praised for its polish and, you know, ease of teaching the game. And that's one of the big reasons we've seen such big growth over the last half a decade. But,
well, yeah, it's great. It's great. But if you compare it to, I mean, if you compare it to Modo, yeah, it's a lot better. But when you compare it to Hearthstone or like an actual, like, you know, a modern age, it's, There's a growth ability with an app that you got to get, and you got to get people invited into. And if things move too slow, we live in a world where people are going to quick to throw it away, and they need this quick consumption. And Magic just isn't that type of game. But maybe there could be ways to serve it better. And play the Magic Origins and get back at me and tell me how you feel about it. But right. I didn't like the experience, and like a friend of mine, I've been trying to get him to play Magic for forever, and he played a little bit of Magic, and he played Duels of the Planeswalker, and he got into it. But Hearthstone, he's like, I can't play Magic. There's like, it's so slow, it's so boring, it's so, like, you know, it just takes forever for stuff to get on. I get into Hearthstone, and you know,
I heard a really interesting idea the other day, because Marcel is right on almost all of this, basically. But this concept was
objectively right,
as opposed to subjectively right,
as opposed to not agreeing with you, I guess.
I heard this idea that was really interesting to me, and it's the idea of whether Wizards may spin off the Magic property into a separate entity. So you would have Magic, the paper card game, and then you would have Magic, probably not Magic Online, but like Magic Origins or Magic Duels or something that exists as like a sister property, which could then implement ideas and card structures that are impossible in paper. So in the way Hearthstone has these variance cards, you know, you play this creature and it randomly picks any creature from your deck type of thing, is that you could build this type of stuff in Magic if it's a digital only sphere. So far we've seen all the Magic Online products mirror the paper versions in terms of what the cards do and mechanics completely. They could split this off into two worlds where you have paper Magic with one card set and online Magic with a separate card set. And if they go that route, they can really speed up Magic and tweak the game to be more appropriate for gaming and mobile devices, and then still use that as some sort of vehicle to move people into paper Magic, where it's a slightly slower, slightly more methodical game. And that was the first time I'd heard that idea, but it's very interesting.
That sounds like an excellent idea, and it sounds like somebody from Wizards did not come up with that idea.
No, probably not.
But that's definitely something they should explore, because I think that does play into it. Magic is, especially on a mobile, Magic is not a mobile game for mobile consumption. You just can't do it. It's like, it just can't be done correctly. So maybe that's the only way that it will work. And that's a different angle of attacking it.
You know, I love Magic. I've been playing since 1994. And I cannot touch a digital Magic product. And part of that is that the MTGO interface just makes my skin crawl. It's just unusable if you've ever spent any time working with interface design or user experience. But beyond that, the concern that the game is slow when you play online is entirely correct. And even if you're an experienced player and you know what to expect, it does drag a little bit. There's a lot of decision process. And I think there's a real zeitgeist to the game in holding the paper cards and having the physical things in your hand really elevates the game experience in a way that the digital offerings can't do. So I definitely appreciate the fact that Magic might just not really work that well in a digital environment in its current form.
So Corbin, are you happy with that? Is that enough Magic talk for you? Magic Online?
Well, I mean, yeah, we want to talk about the economy. And I realize I'm not trying in this to be extremely defensive of the things that Wizards have done, because, like, you know, a lot of the things you say are completely right. However, I very much am against the people who come out whenever they announce anything for Magic and say that the sky is falling and how they're a terrible company and blah, blah, blah. Like, you know, you don't have to, I don't want to conflate defending the status of, you know, some of the online products with supporting people who just want to complain about everything always, because that's the internet and they're very vocal.
That's fair. That's very fair.
So, Travis, talk to us about something. Bring us out of this lull that we've been in, this magic, this pit in the abyss.
Well, you know, I asked my Twitter feed for anything, topics they wanted to discuss, and 90% of it involves fashion and ontology, so I'm not sure how much your general audience wants to hear any of that.
Why would they think of you as either one of those?
Well, I'm just finishing my master's, handing in the thesis this week, actually, for my master's. And I also take plenty of time to harass people about their fashion choices on Twitter. For sure. No cargo shorts. You hear me? Everyone listening? Don't wear cargo shorts. They're not allowed.
Why? Is my boyfriend going to break up with me? Come on.
No, but actually, people will continue to have more reasons not to take you seriously.
Oh, I got some pair. I got some new ones, actually. Some shine.
They're
giants.
Comfy. I'm not going to a fucking job interview.
They're actually pretty cool.
It must be exhausting to give a shit about what people you don't give a shit about think.
It is.
Yeah. Oh, man. You would have a heart attack if you saw the way I dress. You don't even want to get into it. I wear around swim trunks with the netting cut out because they're comfortable as fuck. And board shorts everywhere.
Ryan has the same hoodie that I met him 4 years ago at Gen Con.
Yeah, man. I don't give any shits. If it's comfortable, I keep it. If it's not, I throw it away.
Lifetime hoodies are perfectly acceptable.
Unless they have words on them, right, Travis?
I am against print t-shirts, yes. I don't wear them outside of the house.
What about if it says Brainstorm Brewery? Like, you can't say no to that.
You know, I don't even wear my MTG Price t-shirt out of the house, so I don't know what to tell you.
This is from a guy who refers to Banana Republic as Banana.
Everyone does. I don't understand. What else are you supposed to call it?
Columbia?
Overpriced?
I guess that's a store that sells clothes.
Oh, man. So here we go. We got fashion
we
finance.
Out in real life, you can tell, I think.
Fashion finance.
You know... Well, you know, because I'm sure nobody wants to listen to this. I will say a good buddy of mine, Bill Bolden, a.k.a. Spruik, a.k.a. The Gatherin, asked me if we could discuss some notable exclusions from M15, including
Bird's Paradise.
I assume Magic Origins.
Yeah, Origins. He said M15. I just copied his tweet. The lack of Birds of Paradise, by the way, is the most tilting. I have the spoil set.
No, the printing of that hierarch is the most tilting.
Well, yeah, I have this spoil.
The fact that they thought Birds of Paradise was so busted that it had to have a fixed Birds of Paradise, because they went through and did that with like a whole cycle of a bunch of cards. Birds of Paradise got in on that.
No, Elvish Mystic is too busted, not Birds. Like, Birds isn't even in the line anymore. It's any one drop mana dork.
Well, yeah, but
That's what's crazy.
Yeah, the hierarchy is obviously a bird's like rendition.
Well, that's saying is it's crazy that the line wasn't drawn with Birds of Paradise is too good. It's a card worse than Birds of Paradise. It's too good.
You both were right.
I mean, we could be getting one next set, right? Like,
no, they said that they're probably not going to be doing it in moving on forward.
They want it in standard.
Yeah, it sounds like Elvish Mystic is too much now. I mean, Kibler called it the best card in standard the other day, and I'm inclined to agree with him.
Oh, I don't know about that. I think Seder Wayfinder is the best card in standard.
You could very well be right, although I would say that's a little more meta-dependent than Elvish Mystic is, right? Like, Elvish Mystic is going to be good in any standard.
Seder Wayfinder draws you, like, three cards, gains you, like, six life. The card's absurd.
What was the last event that card won, Ryan?
Seder Wayfinder?
Yeah.
Well, it's been a while.
Oh, okay. I'll
definitely give you that. Doesn't get played in Green Red Devotion. I'm sorry, that's not the flavor of the month.
Oh, so did it get played in the Rally the Ancestors?
Yeah, it's some versions that I've seen online are playing. I don't know about the original copies. It's all over the place.
So what about that card? I heard that we got none of that right. It went to SCG. Are we supposed to get that right?
Well, here's I don't know. I mean, I don't feel bad about, like, that was obviously it's a very niche card, and you know, the deck had it stay in the sun, and that's great. There still hasn't been any money to be made on it, unless you got in it literally bulk. Like, it hit $3 this week, mid-price. So, in a week ago, they were like $1.50. So, even if you got them at like $1.50, you're not making any money when you sell them at $1.50 to a buy list. You know, like, so I don't feel bad about, quote-unquote, missing it, because there's not a ton of money that's exactly there to be made.
You're talking about Rally, right?
Yep.
I mean, I got those. I got a handful of them at 30 cents on Saturday. It wasn't that long ago.
I said not to buy that. I said it was a terrible spec. I think I tweeted about that.
You said that on the cast, I believe.
Oh, okay. I wouldn't say we missed that. Like, the card went up a little bit, and there was no money to be made. This is a perfect textbook example of, like,
Travis
a card
got
that
him
seems
for
obvious.
Cents.
But
he got it for 30 cents, so how's there no money to make?
Well, shit, if you could buy a fucking Maserati for $5,000, that doesn't make it a good investment.
It just makes it
like you getting a deal is good.
Well, okay, here's a question, though. How many did you get?
35. And they were 30 to 50 cents, and I got them on Saturday as it was doing well at the event. And they were all from TCG Player and ABU. It wasn't like I had some inside line. But I will say, hold on, in Jason's defense, I will say that even as I was clicking the buy now button, I'm like, I don't know if this is really the right decision. But they were there and they were cheap, so I went with it. But if somebody had asked me at the time if they should buy it, I probably would have told them no, to be honest.
Travis is the author of the seminal piece, which, if I remember, I'll link in the show notes. My spec quadrupled and all I made was... What was it
75
called?
75 cents.
75 cents, yeah. So some things look like they're obviously going to go up, but like how much you pay in fees and shipping, how much it's actually going to go up. Stuff, it looks like obvious, like, hey, this card went from nothing to doing well. It's obviously got upside, but you just have to get a little bit of experience in MTG Finance to learn if the upside is enough even bothering.
For absolutely. Although I will say on this, in the abstract, that's 100% correct, especially because I wrote about it. But in this particular instance, I do think the Rally of the Ancestors deck is phenomenal. And I will be surprised if it does not have a showing at the Pro Tour, because when we saw that at Chicago, I think the first week, I was watching on camera. I'm like, there's nothing in the format that can deal with this. And I was telling my buddies locally, I'm like, this is going to be the deck to beat next weekend. And they all blew me off, and then it won the next Star City. I was like, this is real. This deck, this strategy is very real. What that does for Rally Ancestors, I mean, we'll find out in another week.
Now, it's not always a like, oh, well, Rally's not a great spec necessarily, because if you look at some of the other cards in the deck, that very well may have upside, and they may be better investments. So it's always important to look at the whole deck and see if there's anything else that's maybe getting a little bit more play and has some more upside, or something that just is maybe mythic instead of rare, or you know, the buy-in is better, you know, there's more upside. So it you got to take a holistic look at it, because I've definitely seen some things that were bad specs, but they made a whole archetype viable, and that gave a lot of upside to some other stuff. I've been writing on MTG Price a lot about the concept of a rising tide lifting all boats, so I guess check every boat.
You have been bending over backwards to get those
boat puns into the
title. Oh, you should see the one this week.
So, I mean, Riley, on its face, though, is the kind of spec you want. Well, because, you know, you get in 30 of them at 30 cents, or you're out, you know, whatever, $10, $15 or something after shipping, whatever. And, you know, it hits $3 if you get rid of them at $1.50, and, you know, maybe if you're lucky, $2, then you make, you know, a pretty decent amount of money there. But the important thing is you don't lose much if it doesn't hit. So those are the kind of specs I like. I usually prefer, like, it's hard to imagine Rally actually sticking. It's just hard. You look at it, it seems like it's a deck that can be answered. It's hard to imagine it becoming a, you know, a $6 or $7 card to where you make that, you know, those profits you really want to be looking at. But I mean, so you do think it has that kind of staying power, Travis?
To be completely honest with you, no, not really. You know, I agree with the first half of your sentence there in that it was only worth buying in because the price was so low. It was at the card's absolute floor. It was not dropping any further. It had seen zero play up until that point. So you were not getting any lower. I think 6 to 7 is possible if it breaks out at the Pro Tour. And I'm talking like at least a top 8 copy, probably more. Realistically, I think we are close to the ceiling of the card if we're not already there. And I have all of my copies listed. I will let them go to the greater fool, as Jason would say.
Well, and the hard part about something like that is that if it doesn't, like if this guy gets mana screwed in the last round and doesn't win this event, then the card, even if it becomes kind of a fringy deck, it still always hovers at $1 and you never make money. Mm-hmm. So it's one of those cards that it's not inherently powerful. It's very good right now because we have the most creatures we're going to have in the format. So there's more for it to work with. And it's, you know, it exists in this one deck. I prefer to speculate on cards that are cheap, but have widespread value across the thing. So like Rattleclaw Mystic, for instance, right now is a card that could fit into multiple archetypes post rotation and is very, very cheap. And that's your kind of card that goes from $2 to $10.
Yeah,
rather than
sure.
Your card that goes from 50 cents to $2. And that's the kind of things I prefer to be in on.
Yep.
So you just risk so much when you go in on these super fringe decks. Sometimes it works out great. But sometimes it doesn't work out at all, and you end up, you know, just having 94 splinter fights. So,
yeah, no, I completely agree, and I will just reiterate that even though I bought them, if somebody had asked me at the time if they should buy them, I probably would not have said yes.
So, yeah, I hope that's it. You know, at least it's a, you know, something informative for people at home listening.
Do as I say, not as I do.
Hey, sometimes you just want to take a shot, and sometimes it works out. But yeah, so do we want to do a very belated finance 101 right here before we move on?
No. Sorry.
Okay.
We'll move on. We're past that.
Yeah, after all the debates on this cast, I don't think anybody trusts us to know enough about finance to do a 101. Your finance 101 homework for the week is to read my Greater Fool Theory article and Travis's My Spec Quadrupled and I Only Made 75 Cents article. There. Boom.
Hey.
Homework, nerds.
You know where you can make that money at, though? That Puka trade. I've been doing that for a while.
Are you on the Puka train?
Yeah, it's not too bad. The biggest thing that helped me is that I've learned how to print on envelopes. Oh, my God. Can I tell you how glorious that makes the whole process?
Mm-hmm.
But, yeah, it's not too bad. I mean, the only problem is you actually got to try to find somebody that wants the cards that you got. That could take forever, but I'm starting to build my Onslaught fetch collection. I'm going to get a play set of that now.
In line with what Marcel said, I want to encourage any of your listeners who are unfamiliar with PayPal's multi-shipping option to find that on their PayPal account and make good use of it because it saves you so much time. It's not as good as printing on the envelopes, but it's very good for shipping anything over about $20.
Can you explain that to people who may not know what you're talking about?
Sure. So generally, if I'm shipping anything over $20, I like to ship it with tracking just to make sure everyone's protected on both ends. And typically what I would have to do before I found this service was self-address these bubbled envelopes with the cards in them, taking them down to the post office, blah, blah, blah. It was a whole mess. Through PayPal, you have the option to do multi-shipping, which allows you to create shipping labels for USPS and print them out at home, complete with tracking. Not only does it save you a trip to the post office, because you can then drop the bubble mailers into any mail receptacle, It also saves you money, and I think it ends up saving you a fairly good chunk, probably like 30 or 40 cents an envelope, which may not sound like a lot, but if you're a heavy TCG player seller or Puka Trade user, you can be shipping 30, 50, 200 of those a week. So it's very useful, makes the whole process very simple. You can do it in your own home, and it saves you money, and I'm in love with it.
Level up. There you go.
So, Marcel, when you are printing onto your envelopes, do you type by hand all the addresses in for the envelope printing? Is that how that works?
No, PukaTrade allows you to copy and paste. I go to Microsoft Word, and they got something called mailings where you could do envelope, and you can it's automated. You press envelope, you press print, put the envelope in your printer, and it goes. Literally takes me maybe 20 seconds to print an envelope.
Wow. And now, are those the like security 8.5 by 11 types of envelopes, or yeah, using a different one?
The standard envelopes, just because I'd done the. You can get the smaller ones that fit cars better, but the cost is just not there. You go to Costco and you get like 500 for like $10. It's a regular size envelopes, and if you tape the top loader and you put it in the middle of the envelope, I find that it works good, and then you don't have to worry about it. People saying that it's not mechanical because there's enough flex in the envelope that they don't really worry about it. So.
Mm-hmm.
It's all positive.
Right, here's a question, or here's a notice, I guess, for the audience. Don't write PukaTrade numbers on the outside of your envelope, because yeah, you never know who is handling that, and you don't want them to steal the cards inside, because if they see it's a PukaTrade, they can drop it on the floor and your cards are gone.
The thing I've been doing with the top loaders, I got a stack of Post-its, and I'll wrap the Post-it around the top of the top loader instead of using tape, because that doesn't leave the residue to mess up a card. And you can write your trade number on that, and makes it simple, stays on the card. It's really, I found it to be very effective and very fast and quick, and I got my process down.
I think I do the exact same thing you do.
All right, so enough with this PukaTrade stuff. Let's get into picks of the week.
It's time for the pick of the week.
Come on, guys. Enthusiasm. It's the night time.
Pick of the week.
Come on, do Macho Man, Randy Savage, Fresh and Jason, let's hear it.
Bonesaw is ready. You guys remember when I was in Spider-Man? Well, I'm ready for a pick of the week, because I'm the cream of the crop, and my pick of the week is cream of the crop. It's really good in Maelstrom Wanderer decks.
Oh, wait, this is real. That's actually his pick. I didn't even notice. I thought he was.
No, let me see if there's upside in Cream of the Crop. That's a good card. I like it in Maelstrom Wanderer a lot. My pick of the week is Foil Odric, because he lets you cheat at Magic. He's like $1.30 or something like that for the foil. Cream of the Crop's $1-ish. Wow, $1? If compare Cream of the Crop to something like Savage Animosity or whatever from Morning Tide? That tribal card? Cream of the Crops? I don't think that's a bulk card.
It's been going up a little bit over the last...
But the dealer confidence is low. The spread's actually getting larger. Dealers are less excited than players. Nah, Cream of the Crop's not great. The foil's at about $3.50 to $4, and the spread's actually going down on that, so... Dealers seem a little more confident about foil Cream of the Crop than non-foil. And any EDH card that's that good in certain decks, like this is an auto-include in decks like Maelstrom Wanderer or anything where you're playing Green Fatties. If people want to start playing Druid's Revelation or whatever the one from the Origins is, that you like scribe 7 and then get life and draw cards, any deck that plays big frat creatures like that, like Mael or something like that, Cream of the Crop's actually good in that deck, so I actually don't hate the foil at under $4. But that's not my pick. I like Odric. Foil Odric is like $1.50, and the spread's actually going down as dealers get more confident in that. I want to say Foil Odric was like in one of those pre-cons, but that's like never really hurt a card too much. Like, if you look at something like... It's hurt the foil price, but like that's the only one with upside. If you look at something like Captivating Vampire, where the foil is practically the same as the non-foil, just because the non-foil is so expensive, I think the worst case scenario on Odric is then, like, the non-foil goes up and, like, the price starts to converge with the foil. I still think the foil has upside at $1.50. And dealers do, too, because the spread has been constantly decreasing even though the price has stayed flat. Odric lets you cheat at Magic, and I think with a lot more people wanting to play equipment-based strategies with the white precon and stuff like Sword of the Animist in the new set and the Relic Seeker, even if Relic Seeker's not good, that's going to get people thinking about equipment-based stuff. So I like Odric. He lets you just win the game, basically. Anytime you can tell your, you can control your opponent's attack step, I'm a big fan of that. And he's constantly suggested by people looking to tune up white-based decks on the EDH subreddit. He's suggested by a lot of people to shore up some of white's weaknesses, which is not being unfair like green and blue in EDH. So I like Foil Odric at $1.50 to $2, and that's my actual pick of the week. But hey, watch Cream of the Crop. Screw it, it's a good card.
Nissa's Revelation was the card you referenced in the midst of that, the Origins card.
Does it make you feel like a big man to point that out, huh?
Yeah, it does, actually. I get a perverse satisfaction from doing this all day, every day.
I have nominal aphasia when it comes to card names.
So you don't think Odric will suffer the same thing as a lot of the other like pre-con foils have over the years and just like not going up as much as they could?
If it's good, the pre-con foil is going to hurt the upside a little bit, but I just because there's more copies of it, but I still think it's got upside at its current price.
How many intro pack foils have really been relevant in any format in a meaningful capacity, though?
There's been a couple. So you have like,
but that's more power level than it is anything else.
Yeah, Captivating Vampire, though, and that card is worth money. Runescarred Demon as well.
Yeah, yeah. Oh, yeah, they can all definitely be worth money, but when you look at the foil compared to regular trajectory, a lot of times, like, for what you would be buying in the regular copies, now I feel like your percentage you'd be making would be higher than that foil for what they usually do go up.
Because the reason I'm saying foil is because it might not have the same multiplier. Like, it might have the same trajectory as the non-foil, just because as it gets more popular, it's not going to diverge from the non-foil price as much. You're not going to see it go from a 2x to 5x multiplier like you do for non-intro pack foils, but if all it does is follow some nice steady growth, it's still a good investment. So I like Odric a lot, and I think it's bound to go up.
All right, who wants to go next?
I'll jump in. So I'm straying away from the bulk cards this week. I have kind of been watching this whole, you know, Snapcaster Mage flying through the roof as far as a rare goes, looking at all these Legacy and Modern playables, and I think this is going to be the year that you, even though Abrupt Decay is approaching $20 in some places, you can still find them for about $16 to $18. And I think if you want Abrupt Decays, this is not necessarily a card that, it's difficult, right, because it could get reprinted. There's certainly, like, always that potential. It's just like Snapcaster, like, it could get reprinted. But if it doesn't, this card could easily be $30 or $40 next year. Yeah. And I think we're getting far enough away where I think Abrupt Decay is going to start hitting those price points if it doesn't get reprinted. It's been a constant growth, and we've seen a lot of spikes over the past year of in this card's price. It's clearly has demand. It's played in a ton of decks. I mean, it's all over the place. It's one of the most powerful removal spells ever printed, and I don't think this card has any chance of going down without a reprint.
Right.
I agree.
Yeah, this is a card we've talked about, I don't know, probably for like a year or two at this point. And the growth this year was exactly what we expected. And like Ryan touched on, what I like most about it is that it hasn't spiked hard. It's just consistently grown. But you think the spike could come next year, or do you think it's something that...
I think we're going to see the same consistent growth, but I think we're seeing like the same percentage that it grew this year. I think it will match next year, which is going to put us in that between $30 and $40 range. I don't think you're going to see this gaining just a few dollars, because the further away from that we get from when that set was printed, the less people have those that they're pushing off from old standard collections and stuff like that. So suddenly the market starts drying up, and everyone who has Abrupt Decays is the people who want Abrupt Decays, which is the same problem you have with like Tarmogoyf and stuff like that, and why the price, even after a reprint, doesn't drop a ton, because nobody's just randomly unloading them onto the market. And I feel like Abrupt Decay is getting to that point. I don't see a lot of them come through, because most of the people who want them for playability aren't going to sell their playset. They're just, you can always find a reason to keep your playset of Abrupt Decays, I guess is more the point. It's like Snapcasters. Like, the card is always good. And any card that you can always justify keeping means less people are selling.
Yeah, this is, you know, I don't go deep on specs or anything, but every Abrupt Decay that's come through the store in the last, like, 2 years. I've just set aside. I have quite a few of them. So I love seeing this go up. I think this is, like Ryan said, next year's going to be really good. It certainly could be at risk for reprint in a Modern Masters 2017. And maybe that doesn't affect it. Maybe it does. I will say that I think, especially if you got in at any point in the past, year, like we've been talking about on the cast, but even if you get in now, I think you make enough money for it, from it before it's reprinted, that it makes it worth it.
Yeah, and I'm not sure I'm super in on this. Like, if you're trying to make tons of money, there's probably some better specs out there, because you definitely get to hold this for a little bit to make that kind of money, since you have to dump 15, 16. But if you don't have your playset, now is the time. Don't be that guy who was looking at Snapcaster when it was $20 and not buying in, because Abrupt Decay is going to be that same kind of card. Yeah. And I don't think it's going to be an $80, $90 card, because it's a little more niche than Snapcaster, but it does see a ton of play and a ton of
Snapcaster
formats.
Snapcaster had help. Snapcaster had a lot of help from dealers buying it very aggressively, but I don't know that that's necessarily an argument against Abrupt Decay, because they could very easily turn their sights to Abrupt Decay next.
Yeah, it's such a safe card. I mean, nobody's. Yep. This is one of those cards where everybody looks at it, and if this card's $35, no one's going to wonder why.
Yeah.
You had to get my
playset.
They're
just going to accept that it's now $35.
Another card in that same realm is going to be Thoughtseize, now that it's rotating out. If you don't got your copies now, get your playset now while you can, because I think it's been rising up consistently.
Yeah, you think junk's expensive now, wait until junk and gender twice as much in 2 years. Ugh.
Next, who we got next?
I'll go. I'll jump in. I'm going to make a standard pick, and this may be a little risky, but I do think there's something to say for it. Demonic Pact is more expensive on Magic Online than it is in paper. We're seeing a lot of people brewing with it, a lot of rumblings about it from some people you'd expect to and be at the Pro Tour. So it's extremely likely that as a new card and as a mythic and something already with a decent amount going for it, a Demonic Pact at $4 is pretty solid, because if it sees any play at the Pro Tour, it's going to get very expensive very quickly.
So, yes, I agree. I can see that. If it doesn't hit, I mean, I still see enough talk about it that I don't see it dropping below that. So if you're a player, like Ryan was talking about last week, this is definitely probably the price to get in at, because I don't see it, even if it does go as horrible, I don't see it being like a $2 card. I think it will maintain its $3.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, it's $4 mythic. It's got a lot of random casual appeal attached to it. It's got the memory, of older cards attached to it. So I actually really like this card in the days leading up to Pro Tour at $4.
I agree. I think this is one of those cards that even with zero play, it hangs out between $3 and $4. It's just so nifty.
Yeah, I really hated this card during the set review. I thought it was just going to be bulk, but I'm actually excited that it's doing something, because I kind of like the wackiness of the card. We need that.
So, all right, who wants to go next?
So my pick of the week is going to be a Moto play. Is going to be, strictly a Moto play, I think. Dark Petition. Mm-hmm. I was playing some Vintage, and yes, I think this is maybe the only, it might see some play in Legacy, but it got to say, in Vintage, I got a turn one kill. My opponent did it on me. I didn't even get a chance to play a Magic card. So, I mean, sure, yeah, he had Dark Black Lotus and like three Moxes and a bunch of other shit. You can see it on my Twitter if you want to see what the board state was like. But, Dark Petition was part of his deck. So foil copies, you can get them Cardbot for 30 cents. You can find them at GoBots for 20 cents and probably other place somewhere in that range. And if it's going to be a staple, internal staple, that price is wrong. And, I mean, at the very least, it'll be $1, $2. So, get some foils, sit on them, and over time, it's going to be a long term, but that card will definitely go up if it's going to see play. I mean, it saw play, and I can only see that happening.
Sure. Well, I brought two for you guys this week, just in case. Both are from Dragons of Tarkir, which as a set, I'm a big fan of right now. These spring sets always get released into very dense standard formats. So there's a lot of competition, a very high power level, and it can be difficult for these cards to shine. And then when rotation hits, suddenly you've got a lot less sets floating around. So cards that kind of got missed for a few months get to spring forward. The first one is Jason's wheelhouse, so he can tell me if I'm way off base with this, but Clone Legion seems like the type of card that will slowly tick up for years as an EDH staple. I mean, 9 mana, copy an entire player's board, seems very reasonable to me. And what's especially appealing about this is that there is a healthy number of copies under a dollar. So a timeless, casual mythic under a dollar, it just seems like a steal to me. What do you think, Jason?
Look at the trajectory on something like Insurrection, which is a much better card. I think Clone Legion is reprintable, so that hurts its upside. I think you have to rely on their deck a little bit more, because at least Insurrection says they can't block. Like, Clone Legion's going to make a ground stall worse. It's not going to break it open, so it's not... Like, for 9 mana, you want to do something huge. But I guess in, like, a deck like Derevi, or not Derevi. Yeah, Derevi, with, like, a lot of come-into-play abilities, like Brago, maybe. All kind of stuff like that. I think it's possible that Clone Legion could... I just don't see it played a lot, but it's definitely got upside at its current price, especially being a mythic.
Yeah, at $1.50, I would not even mention it, but just seeing like playsets under a dollar just struck me as possibly lucrative. The other card that I was turned on to by Patrick Chapin, and I will say that if you are not reading articles by brewers like Sam Black and Chapin and these types of guys, because you don't care about standard or whatever, it's still really worth your time because they will go deep looking at cards and strategies that we forget about if we're not paying attention. So you really get to find some stuff that you just was sort of off of your radar that can be very lucrative. In this case, he mentioned Dragon Whisperer, which is the red mythic 2-drop from Dragons. And we haven't seen this do much yet, but at the same time, we haven't seen a lot of decks, even in this vein, pop up recently since Dragons of Tarkir was released. But we know that red decks tend to be very strong early in a set's rotation this September, like this coming September. And the power level on this thing is excellent. It's a threat on turn 2 and it's a threat on turn 6. And I mean, if you look at the history of mythic creature, 2-drop creatures, none of them have been less than $7. Or all of them have made it over $7, all save for Sage of Ours, which is another 2-drop that I really like in the long term. So I think Dragon Whisperer, even though it's been quiet so far, definitely stands a chance to do very well come the fall, especially at prices under $2.
Yeah.
Sounds good.
Yeah, I think that rounds us out, right? It's everybody? That's 6 picks of the week by my count, so, you know, added value there for everybody.
All right. Well, it's the end of the podcast, everybody. It's your favorite time of the podcast because you get to leave us alone for another week and you don't have to hear us again. You can go listen to the other podcasts that you like much better instead of our podcast. We're out of here. Oh, Travis, where can they reach you at? Where can they find you in this glorious internet world?
I'm on Twitter at WizardBumpin, no G at the end. And my articles are on MTG Price every Wednesday.
And what about the rest of you guys? You want to let them know your deets? Deet to deets.
Yeah, I'm Corbin. I'm on MTG Price, Twitter, CHosser88. Do lots of finance, do the podcast, be doing coverage of the Pro Tour next week for anybody interested in that. So that's where you can find me.
Oh, you're going to go to the Pro Tour?
I'll be at the Pro Tour, yes. Just got back from GP Dallas. We'll be at the Pro Tour, and then we'll be at GP Detroit following that.
Oh, coming up to our place, huh? Yeah.
We should be on a team, guys.
I'm going to be on the coverage team. I am on a team.
Oh,
you should be on a winning team.
Oh, 100%
player. Pretty sure the EV on the coverage team is way higher than any of the other teams there.
I'm probably... except for the true upper echelons, but I think, yeah, probably 99.9.
The EV
right.
of being the Huey, Reed, Owen team is pretty high.
So. I, if you're on it, though, then it's not the Huey, Reed, Owen team. It's the Huey, Reed, and Corbin team. And there's no AV of that team.
No positives. All downside. So there we go. Ryan, you want to let them know, or you don't care? You're too good at what you do. Everyone knows who you are.
Oh, hardly. Now you can find me on Twitter at Cripple Command, CRYPPLE Command. And you can find me at Gathering Magic Weekly and then on Brainstorm Brewery.
And you can find me, Marcel, MarcelNTG on Twitter, and MarcelNTG on Modo. And hopefully I'll try to jam some vintage decks, because I've been playing with this Esper Mentor, and that deck is insane. I actually I'm not going to even try to pronounce words. Reinvigorated my passion for Magic again, playing broken decks and doing stuff in turn one that people can never see in Standard. So we're out of here. Brainstorm Brewery, yet again. Brainstorm Brewery. Let's do a shout out to Brainstorm Brewery and all the other people out there.
We can be found on GatheringMagic.com and BrainstormBrewery.com. Brainstorm Brewery is sponsored by MTGPrice.com. Track your whole collection and its value for free at MTGPrice.com.
Thanks so much for having me, you guys.
Yeah, thanks for coming on, man.
I wish I could say the same thing about having you on, but you know, my apologies.
Jeez.
Now everyone out there who's never been a guest is mad because we're clearly scraping the bottom of the barrel, and they're like, man, that guy gets to be on the cast?
I expected shots from Jason, but not from Marcel. Damn.
Shots from here, at least. Man, Marcel, that's mean.
Hey, if you don't show love to your guests... Well, who
Jason's
are you?
Rubbing off on you.
Don't say that. Please don't say that.
Yeah, sounds gross.
I want to move up in my life. I don't want to go backwards.
Well, Jason start the
kid. Oh, whatever. You're nothing but a Jason copycat anyway. Why don't you get your girlfriend pregnant after I get my wife pregnant?
Exactly.
Tell me more about how you don't want to be me.
Yeah.
Oh, shit. I'm going to move to Michigan. Oh, my God. I'm going to go on stage and think that I'm a funny actor. Yeah, I should go back to that life.
Marcel, you on stage would be pretty hilarious, actually. You could just get up there and do Marcellisms for a solid set, and you'd be fine.
The audience got to see the handwriting on the wall. This reinvigorated my career.
My life's goal is to be a short, fat guy that lives in the Midwest.
My life's goal is to look like BJ Novak and criticize other people's shorts.
Yeah, it is, and I am living my dream, buddy.
Have fun at Banana.
Speaking of Republic.
Stop it. This isn't going to go the way you want it to.
All right. Well, there you go. Fine. Thank you.
This is those awkward gaps we had the last podcast, but it took us like over an hour to get there this time.
We did it. We did it. We're no longer funny or relevant. Or entertained with ourselves.
So exciting.
Is it really that hot out there? So you guys get the cold.
Oh, it's like. For like, today.
So you get the cold for 5 months, and then you get the summer for 3 months, and then you get
this
4 months
of weather. The harbinger of the coming like climate apocalypse.
Yeah, harbinger, you mean hairbringer?
Grease days,
hairbringer. Yeah.
Yes, Corbin, we understand that we don't live in Oklahoma, the cesspool of America. We're sorry that we don't have as many problems as you. Doesn't mean we don't get.
You guys don't even have fracking-related earthquakes. Look at you guys blaming your terrible natural disasters on the weather and not. Man-made intervention.
It's the A's, man. Obviously.
At the end of the day.
No one's forcing you to stay there.
I wouldn't find that as funny if I didn't think you actually believe that somewhat.
What?
Oh. Shots fired right there.
Wow. New low. Marcel just beaming everybody.
No doubt. What's up with you, Marcel? You had a few drinks tonight? You get aggressive.
Yes, actually,
bro.
I did.
Yeah, you got to go get. You got to get stoned again. You don't drink that shit. You're too aggressive.
It wasn't that bad, actually?
No. You're fine. You're just normally not aggressive at all, and you're like calling people out today. So.
I didn't mean anything by that, Travis. Don't take that personal.
It's too late. It's already personal. All right. I remember this till the day I die.
Cool, I don't give a fuck, then.
Be soon. You're going to criticize the wrong pair of cargo shorts and get shot in the face.
That's clearly how the world works.
Actually, buy some cargo shorts that are cool. I think
cargo shorts are fine.
You guys are trying to end this, and then you say things that make me want to, go on for another half an hour here.
So what happens if you got like a shit stain on your shirt? Is that okay?
What? Is that a real question?
Yeah, like you ran out of toilet paper, and then you had to use your shirt as a piece of toilet paper, and then you thought there was a decoration on there that actually looked pretty good. So you decided to wear it as a shirt, like a tie-dye?
I think that if you have poop on your shirt, then by all means you should wear it. That's a good strategy.
Marcel, please tell me you don't actually have a shirt like that.
One time my friend, he had this shirt of this guy riding a Pegasus, and then he spilled coffee on him. And it looked like It hit the exact spot by the Pegasus ass that looked like the Pegasus was shitting on his shirt. And so that's like the closest we ever actually came to something like that.
You know, I could just take a minute. I am so frustrated by this. I went to Tim Hortons the other day, and they put my bagel in a bag. And when they gave it to me, it had the bag had grease and cream cheese on the bottom of it. And I had no idea. And I put it in my lap in the car, and it ruined a pair of pants. And I bought them when I was overseas, and they don't sell them here. So frustrating.
That's what you get for eating at a poor person restaurant.
Oh, first world problems. Jesus.
That's the intro of the podcast right there. We got
Man, I almost tripped over the level of pretentious in that statement.
Oh, my
goodness.
Because
it ruined my pants? Ruining my pants is pretentious?
No, just the way you described it. Yeah. Please describe these only overseas.
I know. You can't find these over here.
You can't. I can't. You know, if you could buy them online, I would just do it and not care, but you can't. I cannot get them shipped to America.
You're not trying hard enough, though.